compassion is not a nice to have. Right. Compassion is not a soft skill. I learned later another way of framing it is it's a harder skill or a heart skill. Hardened people just don't get it, but it's a harder skill.
Hello, world. It's me, Dennis, and we are in search of the new compassionate male. I'm the producer of this podcast, and I'm here with my partner and the founder of In Search Of, Clay Boykin. Good morning, Clay.
Hi, Dennis. How are you doing? Today, we've got Sarah Jamil with us. And, you know, Sarah, you and I have been on Zoom calls. I think we've been in some meetings, but we've never really had the opportunity to sit down and talk. You know, the emails, and we know we're on the same track together. So today we want to hear everything that you're doing and learn from you. And yes. So, yeah.
We were talking, and one of the things that is so profound is that your work in compassion, that you do the hard work, which is work from the inside out, that it is an order of operations. And that's what both Clay and I are learning. And that was what was so profound about your website and your work, that you're working on Sarah first before you go out and take in the world. How did you get to that place, Rob? Because we're in an exteriorized world where we try to fix things outside before we do it inside.
Well, first of all, thank you. I want to bless this conversation with my full prayers as well. And it brings me to the answer to your question as well, peace. Back in 2013, our family was going through, let's say, all the storms that you can imagine in 1 year, personal life-wise, whatever it was, everything came together. That was the year I also turned 40, and I mention that because for me, the year 40 spiritually is the year where you can awaken if you choose to follow the prompts that are around you. And I'll say there were prompts like anything in that year. And what really, actually, that was the birth of my journey into compassion and the birth of Compassion First, the organization or the venture that I founded.
You know, I've read just a little bit about that, and I really, really want to learn about what you're doing.
Yeah. Yes. So when I start explaining it, so Compassion First is the name that I came up with, and it was because I was struggling as a mother to accept what was going on between my son and I at that time. The motherly instinct to fix relationships or fix your children, having control over that whole process of, you know, your child actually doing their own growing, I had a hard time with. And I learned that for this, and I'm seeing the devastation in my family. I have three children. My son is my eldest, and I have two daughters. I was seeing what the turmoil was doing within the family unit. And it was a conversation I had with my husband, where he actually asked me to, Sarah, this is really hard. I need you to take care of yourself. Because if you go down, we're all going down. We rely on you being you, like a healthy you. And so I took that advice and did some personal development courses. My husband and I both enjoy this journey of evolving. And that's where compassion came in, with me hearing Karen Armstrong speak on Oprah. Super Soul Sunday, and I heard her definition of compassion, heard about Charter for Compassion, and her definition was, I'll paraphrase because I'm not very good at memorizing or remembering word by word. Look within your own heart and see what gives you pain, and then decide that under no circumstance will you inflict that pain on others. And I learned after I added, or on myself.
Yeah.
And the pain, what was that pain? That was that mother, that pain. The bond with my son was breaking. Mm-hmm. So that's how I experienced it. And I couldn't bear that I couldn't do anything about it at that time. But I didn't know how to channel that. So after listening to Karen, I searched up, okay, what's this Charter for Compassion? And that's sort of where, and it coincided with the personal development course I was doing at the time. We had to think of a project of reaching out to community and build community. I was very active at that time in my children's school council. What would that be in the U.S.?
PTA, something like that, the parent-teacher organization.
Yes. And I really wanted to bring the whole concept of compassion into the school community. So long story short into how compassion first was born, basically it was a lot of conversations I was having at home with my husband of what was stirring up inside of me. And we were saying, we've got to do something with what's coming up. Then we had to find a name for what was coming up. And my husband was asking me, what is it? What's so important to you right now? And it was, number one, I believe compassion is the solution to all the issues that we could ever experience, whether it's within ourselves, in relationships, or in systems, like any mm-hmm. kind of institution or organization or whatever that system is. Mm-hmm. And I believe we should put that first, and starting with me as a mother, putting it first. That's when a better world starts with me, that my tagline or my affirmation came naturally from that conversation. And that has stuck with me. I still have trouble explaining what is it that you do, other than I am living that message. And I have seen firsthand what living that message, what an energetic influence it has had around me, whether it is in my home. My daughters are so aligned with the work, so they're actually part of whatever events, workshops, whatever we're doing. My one daughter is 23, the younger one is 11. If you ask her, she will tell you, my mom is the definition of compassion.
Oh,
so
my.
If you can do that in your home, my son, that's the, still I'm struggling with that a little bit. Can you just get it as well? Mm. But I think he has. He just has it's from a whole different angle. So
there you go.
That's where, you know, compassion first started, where I was like, actually it's mothers, or is it children, or is it daughters, or is it sons, or what is it? That defining what that is actually went a little bit in the background, and I was more focused on, hang on, I'm actually seeing how this is evolving and how this concept is growing organically. And that's what what I really like, and what I like about our conversation today is, let it happen.
Yeah,
it will, like, let the conversation happen. You don't have to script it. You don't have to. You just need to have an intention.
Dennis, how many times have we?
Oh,
this is an organic process. You know, we're on a journey. We're in search of.
The new compassion. We are so aligned with you.
Mm-hmm.
And Clay, this is our role as men, because we look at you and go, okay, imagine, we try to imagine us as children and having these conversations when we were young men, and not having a space to express that, not even to have the language to begin to express that, because it's hard. You're digging through testosterone. You're digging through a lot, a pretty heavy and a world mindset that we're having to deal with. Clay, you get that, right?
I do. And as Sarah, as you were talking, I draw pictures and mind maps and stuff. And as you were talking, I saw mother and I saw the son. You know, the daughter's going to evolve from mother, but the son has got to make a break to go find out what it is to be a man. And so he's alone because he wants you to tell him, but no, I've got to find out from another man. And he may go to his father or his father figure who may not be there either physically, emotionally, or spiritually. And so the young boy bounces and then he looks up. So what is it to be a man? And more times than not, spins off and ends up getting himself in trouble. And that was our journey, Clay, and mine.
And so many others of our age.
Yeah. And it's really tough. It's really tough because we love our mother. And you know, for me, I grew up not trusting men. So I was in this void, you know, and left my own devices to figure it out. So I can relate to a certain extent to your son. You know, everybody's experiences are different, but I see some parallels.
I love how you're able, Sarah, how you're able to help him have words and experiences and modeling that you're modeling for him how he can be by practicing self-compassion yourself. He has a model of someone in his life, whether he can get it at that moment or not. We delay it sometimes, like it takes a while for us to get it before it finally goes, oh.
Yeah, it only took me 50 something years to figure out what mother was telling me when I was 10 years old. It's like, oh, that's what she meant. I get it now. I'm sorry she's not present for me to say that to her.
But so. See, that's what it is, patience as well. Mm. I've learned two lessons from what the hardest years were, actually 7-8 years of what I called my soul was crushing.
Yes.
And but realizing those were the lessons. And you can only think that way once you've done the work on yourself, once you awaken yourself, once you listen to those prompts that are coming. And I will add, I got much closer. I'm a woman of faith. Mm-hmm. I got much closer to my version of God.
Yeah.
In the darkest hours. And I believe my son had a very dark moment when he turned towards help from us. Mm-hmm. That dark moment, when that was happening, I was feeling it. I didn't know. And I'll tell you what, how I was on a walk. Walking in outside and fresh air and nature has been my meditation. Mm-hmm. And I was walking and I saw a squirrel cross the road, and I saw that squirrel get hit by a car. And I saw that squirrel suffer. And I was crying. I was watching and I couldn't do anything to help that pain that it was going through, and I watched it die. Yeah. This was from the pavement, watching this just happening. And that, you know, when a fish is out of water and it's, you know, what's it called?
He's splashing around.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That suffering hasn't left me. Mm. That pain, that what I felt, And so that's when my heart, I think, really just, it just, I was like, oh my God, I couldn't do anything here. But what happened? I was witnessing it. Yeah. Succumbing to what happened to it. Mm. And I found out later, it was around that time, that my son was experiencing his moment, let's call it between life and death.
Yes.
And so I'm like, well, this bond is definitely there.
Yeah.
Your work in schools, Sarah, mm-hmm. is mostly with girls and the girls in school.
No, the work I did at my daughter's school was more community minded. Like, with what can we do for our for the classes? Like working with teachers, mm-hmm. thinking of ways on how to, you know, the word kindness is used more than the word compassion. This was an experience I had when I started having conversations around compassion in schools. It was actually viewed as something religious, and we don't mm-hmm. think we can have it. And that was a eye-opener for me. Kindness was easier to use.
Wow.
And I think kindness, that's what has happened. And Dennis, I was sharing with Clay, I listened to your interview with the Myth Salon
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
the other day. I was listening, I think I listened halfway, and I made a note of your, when you were talking about compassion being a soft skill, but more than that, like people usually, you didn't say it was, you right. wanted the other aspects of, so the whole spectrum, that has been my fight, is no, compassion is not a nice to have. Right. Compassion is not a soft skill. I learned later another way of framing it is it's a harder skill or a heart skill. Hardened people just don't get it, but it's a harder skill. Why is it we call compassion as something? Okay, we'll get to that. But hang on, that actually matters more than 1 + 1. And I haven't been able to create programs per se yet that I could implement in schools. But it is conversations that I'm so focused. I've found having conversations is the first important step. It's not so much that I start flagging, hey, here's compassion first. And, you know, do you want to just bring in what I'm doing? Mm-hmm. I am struggling with it though, because, you know, you want to create something that can be seen, but then it's like, what I am creating is this. And I'm creating children, I am creating an awareness in my children, in my family, and I mentor girls. So I do mentor girls in my faith community, and I've done that for the past 20+ years when I was in Denmark. I am from Denmark, and I do it to this day. Mentoring in both the religious teachings that we have, but more so on character development, on who am I, and how can I use the teachings that we have that are just not accepted in the part of the world where we are, as you know, we're kind of struggling with a little bit. Why do we have to learn this when it's not like that when we go out? Bridging that, I am better at it because I was born in a Western country. I was raised in it. I became a teacher in it. And I'm living here still. So I can bridge that gap and I connect very well when I communicate. I have conversations still, not when I'm doing 1 + 1, whether it's the Arabic yeah. alphabet or not the formal. It is the soul to soul connection. That's what I'll use. Whether you're male or female, when I have conversations, I have learned I'm very good at sifting or filtering past what I'm seeing, and I can actually connect with the soul, and that's where I can offer what I have, whatever that is.
Wow. You know, I so connect with that. And I so appreciate what you said. Kindness. You know, Dennis, I was, and Sarah, I was trying to get my arms around love. People say it's all about love. It's all, an example for me is like trying to grab Jell-O. What does that mean?
Right.
And so compassion became for me love in action.
Mm-hmm.
So it was more tangible. But you've taken it to another step, which I absolutely love, to take it to kindness. That's a word that gets used. And I never thought until you just said it that there's people who think compassion is a religious, is religious, religion oriented. And boy, that really gives me, that's why we have these. That's why we had these conversations. Yeah.
I love that because kindness is like a key to the door of compassion that can help us get in. It is a struggle for us, but once kindness, if we start at kindness, as you said, that's something much more universal that we can start the conversation and then dig up, which is why when Clay so beautifully framed this, when you frame this as in search of, it means that we're not there. We're not at a place and saying, come and visit us at this place called compassion.
Teach you. Yeah.
No. Mm-hmm. We are here to learn.
Yes.
You know, there's the other thing you brought up, I got us, when you made the point about it's a heart skill and it's a harder skill. Boy, that just says volumes. It says
what
volumes.
What beautiful words. Yeah. They opened my entire insides when you said that. Mm-hmm. Just completely broke. Something broke open inside.
Yeah.
And I felt such a rush. It was astonishing, Sarah.
I heard this from, I was having a conversation with one of the Charter for Compassion staff that I work with, and we were having a conversation on this, that I get so upset when I read in a newspaper, you know, wherever I read, oh, compassion is a soft skill. I'm just like, I just cannot take it. And she was saying she had heard it from somewhere else, and I forget from where. So I hope I find the source so we can give credit to, I think it was a gentleman who had shared it and suggested, let's try looking at it this way. And when you do, why is it harder? And why is it a lot of people choose not to work on themselves? Not to see the prompts, not to grow, because it's hard.
Like,
it's scary.
Yes.
You don't want to do it alone.
Yeah. You know, Sarah, you posted something this morning that was beautiful. And I think it was sparked from part of our conversation with the Myth Salon on, we touched on servant leadership. Mm-hmm. Can you talk a little bit about what you shared with me?
Yes. So it was an article that what kind of a leader is it the world needs today?
Right. Yeah, that's the essence of it.
And we go back in history for that, in that article. Mm-hmm. We go back to the Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him.
Yes.
Upon him, who, you know, was the founder of Islam, but actually Islam was, it was revealed through him. And his way of being, his way of leading, his way of being is what I prefer, because that's what this is about.
Yeah.
How are we choosing to be? It's such a short, you know, but very profound, because what do I have to think about that? Yes, you do. Right? You have to. So it's all about how was he as a leader? Because for us, he still is someone we refer back to time and time again, him and any other divine prophet, because we believe that they're all those special beings. And skill is all character traits, right? Mm-hmm. It's all humility, like humbleness, extreme compassion, mm-hmm. Equanimity,
yeah.
Patience, tolerance, like those kind of things. But also justice, like a sense of justice, where you need to, like, so the middle way, you can mm-hmm. be firm, but you can be firm in a loving way.
Oh, mm-hmm. yes.
And
yes.
You can be soft or kind mm-hmm. also. Like, yes. why say either or? It is, and we believe he's been, so he was the evolution of whatever prophet had been, had come over centuries, the human evolving, the spiritual human evolving yes. into this complete package. What is the complete package? Well, what the way we see it is he embedded all the divine attributes in him as a human.
Mm-hmm.
And that doesn't mean that that's it. We leave it there. Why? Because he was an example for the world to till exactly. it ends. For yeah. humans to see it if they choose.
Because without exemplifying, without it being an example, it doesn't sink in. That's what I love about your path and what you're doing in your searching and working in compassion within yourself first. Because that is our path. That is our that is our direction. Do this first. Be there first, because we in our world with all the multimedia and the internet and all, it tells us that the answer to my problem lies outside of me. Mm-hmm. If I will only have this, if I will only gain that, if I will only achieve this, it will somehow salve that burning that's within me. And that's the illusion. And that's what every great teacher mm-hmm. always reminds me, is that it's not out there and I mm-hmm. must do this work first.
You know, that's a, oh boy, I just was reading this, learning about the wisdom that's found in mythology. And I read where there's three great myths that are happening. One is the myth of human progress, where more is better. And I believe that within that is the patriarchy. And then there's the myth of the fall, which is our successes are our failures in this context. We have done so much to make technological progress and, you know, and you just go on, mm-hmm. but we've raped the earth in the process. And the third one is the myth of paraphrasing of it doesn't matter. You know, you don't have any impact on it anyway. And our Western culture struggles with all three of those.
That last one, it doesn't matter anyway, is accountability, is responsibility. And I would, it's linked back maybe in, if we look at Western world or the Christian world, it may link back to the teaching of the doctrine of atonement, of someone carried the cross for us. I want you to consider that. Could it be that we have said, hey, actually, someone already did it for us. It doesn't matter what we do. Because you know what? I'm exploring this.
Wow.
What in my teaching in the scripture that I study, every soul will carry its own cross.
Yeah.
And no soul is burdened beyond what it can bear. That's a quoted from the Quran. What does that mean? That you have to think of tomorrow.
Yeah.
You have to live your life intentionally.
Yeah.
Thoughts, feelings, actions. Everything matters.
So if I understand correctly, the myth of it doesn't matter, your take was because the cross has already been buried for us. So show up and do what you're supposed to. I took it as it doesn't matter anyway. Let's go have a beer. Fatalistic.
That's the same thing though, Clay.
Yeah.
Go ahead. Help me.
Because it doesn't, like, go and have a beer. For me, a beer, or let's just, you know, let's live life to your fullest and don't think about what's going to happen tomorrow, because we don't even know if it's happening tomorrow, right? That's kind of the mindset. But when you're a believer in something bigger than you, you're also, so in my faith, we do believe in the hereafter. We do believe that the soul will never die. We do believe that the physical body here, we're going to leave this at some point when we die, every human, and we're going to live on. So we must think about what are we nurturing in our soul daily, because we don't know when we're going to die.
No.
We don't know when that's going to happen. So we can't live in fear of it, but we should be mindful of it. That, hey, I'm actually not dying. I'm going to continue living. So what do I want to, so it's a continuous evolvement of the soul. It's a spiritual evolvement. That's never going to die.
No.
When you live with that mindset, you have a little bit more perspective on the whys of the world. Like, what's happening? Oh, why is it? Oh, and myth number one, two, all of them apply here.
Mm-hmm.
When you think from that lens, it's all about perspective. through these years, 7 years that I, 8 years I talked about, I wrote a chapter for a book, and that was entitled Peace. And in there, it's my quest for peace. So striving for something, searching for something, means it's a continuous journey,
mm-hmm.
continuous work. Doesn't mean I pick it up today and forget about it for a week. And I mean, yeah, you can, but you're still on the journey.
And you know, Sarah, I'm just so grateful for the opportunity to be able to see when you look out, when you go to the children at the schools that you work with in this, and you see the young boys, are you seeing shifts in their sparks that they're coming around that they're thinking about that might not have been there before, as you're seeing? Or is there awareness that these children, because I know that when we were growing up, I'm 72, Clay is in his mid-60s, so we grew up in a much more rigid mindset culture as to what was there. These children are digital natives. What are you seeing out there, and as far as their willingness to think about what compassion and how kindness might be a doorway to leading in that to one another in a world that can appear very polarized?
So there's different layers to this answer.
I had a feeling I just asked a 24-hour question.
Yeah, no, but I'll. So, am I seeing it when I see young men and boys? When you said it, right away, I was like, depends how the home environment is. It depends how awake the mother is, and the father is, if there is, you know, if any of them are present in the home. Generally speaking, the next generation is, and the whole conversation, they're more awake than we realize. They're thinking beyond these definitions and frameworks that we have been used to. They're breaking those kind of narrative. Whether they're more compassionate, well, maybe. Kindness, yes, it is. Children are innately so pure, so innocent. They're shaped by the environment, right? And so it depends a lot on the environment. What I'm realizing with the work that I want to do is it's actually mothers I want to focus on. See, our in my teachings, the role and status of a mother is so sacred, but it's been perceived as something not sacred. It's been made profane. Mm. It's been made as something, you're just a mom. Really? Is that all you do? And I fight against that. Like I really, that's another thing. It's like the soft skill. The one, you're just a mom. And, you know, it's just societal, no matter what society you're in. Future generations, the success or failure, it's hard to say it, but lies in the mother's lap.
Yeah. Mm.
What does that mean? We have a saying of the Prophet, peace be upon him, that paradise lies at the feet of mothers. Mm. What is paradise, first of all, right? It's just a concept. It's not a place. Feet of mothers in her steps. What is she modeling? Who is she? Does she know who she is? Does she really know who she is? The capacity of a mother? That is far more important than the titles I can accumulate and the money I can accumulate in this world as a mother. Doesn't mean the mother has to do everything. What does it mean? It means everyone has to support the mother in doing what she is here to do. Mother. To mother. Mm. Whether she becomes a biological mother or not, that same instinct is present in fathers too, in men too. And that is compassion when you really go down.
Isn't that what you're talking about, Clay, about why you did this as the compassionate male, not the compassionate man?
Yes, that's exactly right. You know, in the beginning, I was sitting there going, well, I'm going to write this book about the new compassionate male, or it was the new compassionate man. And then I realized, no, that energy is in all of us, just like the divine feminine energies in all of us. So I'm going to write the book about the new compassionate male. Well, when am I going to be ready to write that book? I don't have that answer because I'm in search of the new compassionate male. And then the light came on and said, oh, that's what's happening here. Mm-hmm. I don't profess to have the answers, but the combination of all of these, what you bring to the party, that what you've woken us up with here, is another piece that builds towards that new compassionate male.
So I can nurture my mother. I can nurture my divine feminine, or I can express nurturing. That is an aspect of the divine mother, of that, of having that as part of that in every one of my relationships. Mm-hmm.
Really, that is what it is, right? It's the first compassion. Is beyond gender.
Yes.
Our creator is beyond gender. Our soul is beyond gender. The gender that we've been assigned in this world, in this body, is a function. We have to get beyond. And I think we had this conversation, Clay, when we, in the V2020 series, the interview with the around gender reconciliation, I think I had posed the question
with Will and Cynthia.
Go beyond the reconciling genders, because it's whether it's feminism or not, we are kind of stuck, I feel, in this conversation. And also, especially when I talk about Islam and, you know, Islam's view on women, and, you know, you constantly have to defend what does it mean to be a Muslim woman, right? Defend, because there's this stereotype. And it's like, you know, actually, in the Quran and our teachings, the focus isn't that much on that. The focus is so much on the soul awakening, the soul working on itself, like nurturing your soul. And it is equal for men and women. Where there is some difference is in the function that we have as a man as a woman, as a father, as a mother, as a husband, as a wife, as a whatever, the function. But it has been perceived as, so that's where the patriarchal interpretation has happened.
Exactly. Within
the Muslim countries and outside.
Exactly. That,
you know what, let's use all this and start portraying it as whatever. And then the ones living with it who want to live with the teachings, it's like, well, I actually, really? I don't know that way. Well, you know, you have to like kind of say, well, and instead of preaching it, you come back to a better world starts. So we have to live it. I have to be it. Yeah. That's the only way we can touch hearts. That's the only way we can inspire, is through our own example, not putting ourselves up here, but constantly reminding ourselves that we are on a journey. I am on a search. I'm not an expert, but I definitely have learned something. And if you'd like to know, I will share it with you.
That's what I love about when we remove comparison from that, because the instant I attempt to compare myself to someone, I will find myself in a hierarchy, either above or below. That's what I'm not as good as, or I am much better than. That's where I go. But if I go is that I am the perfect embodiment of Dennis Tardon. That's my only goal, is to be the best embodiment of this particular unique soul that happened to be here. There is no way I can compare myself to you, Sarah, or to you, Clay, because the instant I do, I lose the mission.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That is what it is. At the same time, we cannot do it alone.
It's the reason why
we're social beings, right? And so there's a very wise design to life, to human creation, to all of creation. Everything is designed with some wisdom. And so, you know, how isn't it better when what vibration do you feel when we're talking like this than when we go into a total different vibration and like, right? You're just like... And it's nothing's working. But hey, maybe something is working. Let's just raise ourselves up. And when you were talking about being the Dennis I'm supposed to be, I really love the original meaning of education, to educate, educo, from Latin, to draw out from within.
Oh.
Okay?
Oh.
That's profound. To draw from within, we already, from creation, from the start of creation, think about the design. We have been designed and given the talents, abilities to become the best versions of ourselves. We just need maybe some help to draw it out. What is that? What does that look like? Right? Isn't that from support from community? From your relationships, from your interactions with other humans, even with animals and with nature, something is drawn out every time you have an encounter. That's something. What is that? And that is to be human. To be a human, a soul in a human body.
Yes. It does not, for me, get better than this. Right here with you two, because this is what community is about. This is sitting here as open-hearted as I see both of you, as open-minded as both of you, all of us working hand in hand on this journey. And because they're doing a lot of study right now in field theory, that we carry fields around. And there's an opportunity to lift to a higher frequency, to a higher level. And we've known this. You've been sitting in a room when somebody walks in and you can feel a shift, right? So all they're doing is putting the science to what this was. It's like we didn't invent radio waves. Radio waves were there long before we had a receiver to be able to tune. So I feel like this conversation we get a chance to raise the frequency of the entire planet, of the consciousness of what we have by having conversations like this.
And that's it. That's what makes me really, that raises my vibration, right? It makes me even more passionate about, let's continue these. This is the work. And unfortunately, it's not recognized in wherever to make it, whoa, this is, you know, but it doesn't matter.
Yet. Because, yet. I love you keep saying yet. I love you saying that.
Because, you know, we know everything is evolving. Yeah. And it's changed. Whether it's first deconstructing and whatever, you know, yes, there's lots of deconstruction going on right now. Mm-hmm. And that's okay. That means something else is to be born.
Yes.
And so, you know, you have to have that mindset if you want to have a healthy mind. But you need support. Yeah. And that's what I learned through my work as well is I love building community. And so I'm focusing on women and girls because that is where I feel I can connect better. But, you know, we are connecting here too. It's just sometimes messages are received better by someone from your own mm-hmm. background as well. Mm-hmm. But that really has my intent is, it doesn't matter what background you are, our human experience is the same.
You know, to your point, and I agree with you, the men's circle that I've got and the men's work that I do is work that men must do with men. You know, I've said countless times that from a consciousness standpoint, and again, a gross generalization, but I really kind of believe that women are a bit more conscious than men. And you're not going to come down here to meet me where I am. I've got to come up here so that I can engage be on the same level consciously. And
we have to do the work.
We have to do the work. And that's what we've got to do with one another, to learn the good part of being a man modeled by the other men around us, and to be able to create that space, which goes against the grain because, you know, we're in competition. We don't trust each other. And so we're isolated. And so how can we be educated? How can we bring it out from within and be in a community to help bring it out from within if we're isolated?
Right. And that's where the patriarchy, which emphasizes competition, dog eat dog, getting to the top, systemically that it works, that in this interconnected synergistic world there is a different way, and this is where we get to learn from women.
We men are learning how to connect into our hearts, not to leave our head behind, but to integrate,
yeah,
to bring in the lunar masculine,
yep, which is
and, this. Yeah, which is what we're talking about. From the lunar masculine is where compassion is born for us. And then for women, the solar feminine.
Which are the leaderships, which are our opportunities to have our amazing leaders and leaders of countries, leaders of business, leaders in the work that we can that we can have this.
So we're
you personify so beautifully. You're absolutely radiant, Sarah, in that. I see your power, your boundaries, your clarity, the work that you're doing, your certitude, all of these are solar feminine principles, as I am beginning to understand. You have to understand, if we have this conversation in 6 weeks, I'm going to go, you really thought you knew what you were talking about, Dennis? You have no idea what you were talking about, but this is the level to which I can understand it at the moment.
But this is what I love about learning. I love that as our awareness grows, you know, we just start seeing things, life, in a new light. But it, like you said before, earlier on, it was always there. Your awareness, just you weren't self-aware enough, right? And that's really what it is. And so we have to continuously strive. We have to keep learning. And we have to let that. So it's ego, it's greed, it's the power, you know, yes. Greed for power. What's that going to get you? Like, really? You know, sometimes it's just, you know, can you wake up? But we all have it. That's the thing, right? It's not like I still have moments of comparison. I still have moments of where I don't feel good enough. I still have moments where I'm like, what do you think you're doing? And those moments are just as important as the moments where I have clarity or where I feel confident. They're all part of the learning. If darkness isn't, so, you know, why is there bad stuff? If darkness isn't there, you will not see the light. Both were created by Creator. The darkness and the light. So we have to accept both.
I love that, Sarah.
That's the up and down, right? The evolving. You have to have something bad.
Yeah.
Good and bad, again, are very, we shouldn't be using both anymore. Right. But there's healthy, unhealthy, productive, unproductive. Like, you know, let's use other words, language matters.
It does. And Sarah, that's one of the things that I love, because if I can have compassion for myself about all the darkness that is that exists and exists through my journey, if I can have compassion for myself, then I find that I have a much better chance of the next time that situation comes up of not repeating it. But the less compassion I have for myself, the more I judge myself, the more I will then have a struggle with it whenever I am faced with that situation again.
Yes. Yes. And that's the wisdom. That's what it is. And it's I believe that whatever work I was supposed to do here, you were supposed to do, both of you, we're doing it. It may not fit in a box that the world wants to put it in or fit it in. Another thing that I feel like I struggle with or I want to get rid of are these boxes, labels. And we do need them sometimes to, you know, we do need it to, I don't make sense of things. That's fine. But it's not absolute. What is absolute is love and is compassion.
And kindness.
You know? Yeah.
And the key being kindness. Oh, thank you, Sarah, for your time today. Thank you for joining us, teaching us, modeling us, for being such a gracious guest. Clay, what is there to say?
Will you come back?
Yes.
Oh, we'd love for you to come back to continue this conversation because it's so enriching.
Thank you, Clay. Thank you for joining, for inviting me along the journey. And Sarah, what a lovely opportunity to be able to meet you. And thank you, everyone who gets a chance to watch and or listen to this particular podcast of In Search of the New Compassionate Male. And we will see you next time.